I'm very happy now to welcome Sarah Schmidt. She is a field organizer for the Western Region of Amnesty International, USA. And Susan Tarman is here with us. She founded the Santa Fe group of Amnesty International. Welcome, ladies, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So let's talk about the history of Amnesty International. This is an organization that was founded nearly 50 years ago, 48 years ago, I think. Susan, how did it start?
A gentleman by the name of Peter Berenson was reading his Guardian paper in London in 1961, and he read the story of a couple of Portuguese youths in a local bar toasting to freedom. And they were apprehended and thrown in jail. And he couldn't quite believe the story he was reading. So he wrote a letter to the editor of The Guardian, and therein started the letter-writing campaign that is what Amnesty International is known for. People read his letter, so other people started writing, and lo and behold, these Portuguese youths were let out of prison.
Because of a public media campaign, which is how Amnesty works. Sarah, where did it go from there?
So after the Portuguese students were released, Peter Benenson launched a year-long campaign called An Appeal for Amnesty. He wrote an article called The Forgotten Prisoners, which was published in the London Observer. He asked readers all over the world to send governments letters asking for the release of six prisoners of conscience from various parts of the world. There was an overwhelming response from all parts of the world, and these six individuals ended up being released. The organization then, it became an organization, and it grew to identify those prisoners of conscience and political prisoners across the world. Letters were being written across the world, and it eventually grew into an organization that protected all human rights, not just the freedom of expression.
What are some examples of people who were prisoners of conscience over the years?
We have examples from all over the world and just about every country. Prisoners of conscience are those who are imprisoned based solely on their beliefs and who are exercising their right to freedom of expression. And political prisoners have been also imprisoned for their beliefs. One of the most prominent prisoners of conscience that we're working on behalf of right now is Aung San Suu Kyi, who was the democratically elected leader of Myanmar and Burma. And we're writing letters on behalf of her as part of our global write-a-thon right now.
Why is it that these letters work? In other words, the people who are imprisoning these folks have the guns, and letters from far away, from the United States or from England or from Germany or from wherever they're writing letters, why do they have an effect?
The letters have an effect because it's coming together of people from all over the world to put public attention and to put a negative spotlight on the governments who are oppressing individuals who have been identified as prisoners of conscience or political prisoners. The letters work because there are so many, and there are expressions from people all over the world. We're acting as one voice to hold accountable governments that are oppressing their citizens.
I have a wonderful story about that, Mary Charlotte. The people who run the Las Vegas chapter, the Pearsons, were actually missionaries in a tiny little area in Africa, and Amnesty targeted that tiny little government regarding some prisoners of conscience there. And when the letters started to flood in, it literally closed down this post office because it was such a small entity.
Amazing. So there were more letters in a short period of time than they were used to handling.
Absolutely.
Very interesting. So let's talk about Aung San Suu Kyi. Tell us, Sarah Schmidt, her story and about the current campaign.
Sure. So Aung San Suu Kyi is a Nobel Prize winner. She won the Nobel Peace Prize. She has been imprisoned by the military rulers of Myanmar. She founded the National League for Democracy, a pro-democracy political party in Myanmar. In 1990, this National League for Democracy won almost 80% of the parliamentary seats. She was then jailed as a result of this. The landslide victory surprised the military junta and imprisoned her. She's spent 14 of the last 20 years under some form of detention. She was most recently sentenced to 18 more months of how's the rest?
And so the current letter writing campaign, which is happening as we speak at the Santa Fe Baking Company, people can just, well, Susan, what should they do? Can they just, if they're driving by or if they want to come in, they can just come in right now?
Absolutely. We are here from 8 a.m. until 11 a.m. I have all of the things you need. You don't need to bring a thing except a pen, and I even have those. We have 10 prisoners of conscience we're working on. We have all of their stories as well as all of the addresses you need. We're writing to the governments regarding the prisoners of conscience, and we're writing to the prisons, to the prisoners themselves. Very short, beautiful postcards that have been donated to us here in town. Simple messages simply saying, you are not forgotten. We are behind you. Stay strong. It will end one day. So please come by. We have everything set up for you to spend maybe a half an hour and write 3 or 4 letters.
And that was something that you were doing last Friday and again today. Sarah Schmidt, when prisoners receive these letters from basically total strangers in another country in English, which may or may not be a language that they speak very well, what is it like for them to get these letters, these postcards?
These letters and postcards show an act of solidarity, and for prisoners that we are in communication with, that we've talked to after their release, they tell us over and over again that the letters they receive are what got them through. Many of these prisoners have been in prison. They haven't seen their families. They don't have access to their basic rights for years. And for them to receive a letter or multiple letters from all over the world saying, we know that you are there, we have not forgotten you, and we stand by you, raises their morale and allows them to stay strong until they are released. As an organization, Amnesty International has helped release 44,000 individuals from jail across the world over the course of our nearly 50-year history.
And that's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable. 44,000 individuals have been released from jail, rescued from torture, or aided in other ways following action by Amnesty International activists and volunteers such as Susan and her group in Santa Fe. Right now, we have 7 write-a-thon events happening in New Mexico, from Las Cruces to Gallup to Rosiada in Las Vegas. And we have over 700 additional letters pledged to be written by individuals in New Mexico.
I suppose it's easier to come in and sit with Susan and the gang and write the letters than it is to remember to do it at home.
Yes.
Exactly.
As a matter of fact, that is why these get-togethers are sponsored. People are willing to sit at their computers and send emails, but again, there is nothing like a physical letter going through the mail, just as I described the story of the Pearsons in Africa, literally shutting down a post office. There's just something more about seeing a physical letter come through the mail that has a lot to do with it.
It's very much, as you describe it, Sarah Schmidt, a grassroots kind of effort. In other words, every little action on behalf of members or interested individuals makes a difference.
Absolutely. We have more than 2.2 million members and subscribers in over 150 countries across the globe, and it is a grassroots movement. It's volunteers, activists, individuals, children, old folks who are all coming together to stand in solidarity with those whose human rights have been violated and to take action. The Global Write-A-Thon is a way for individuals to have a positive impact on the lives of victims of human rights all over the world.
Santa Fe has over 3,000 members that belong to Amnesty International. The average viable group of an Amnesty local group is usually no more than 6 people.
Interesting. Now, you are the founders, Susan, of the local group. Tell us why you decided to found it and what you have been doing.
Well, in 2006, my job load, I decreased my job load by a lot, and it was time for me to start giving back in a way that I hadn't been able to do in the prime of my life. So I had done Amnesty in college, and I went on to Amnesty because it was something I knew. I went on to their website, and I found that their regional conference was being held in Tucson. So I thought, well, that's just in a month or two. I think I'll go. And from there, I met the Pearsons from Las Vegas, and they said, you can come to Las Vegas and write letters with us. And I drove to Las Vegas once a month from about October, November of 06 till about April of 07 when I started my own chapter. I thought, wow, I've got seven friends that'll sit and write letters with me. And the other thing about Amnesty, it is so easy to either start a group or join a group or do it by yourself, because the website is so user-friendly. Yes, it is a wonderful website.
I think one of the things that you must come up against from time to time, and Sarah, tell me if this is true or not, is the kind of, even though we know better, the unconscious assumption that Americans sometimes carry around, that if somebody's in prison, they must have done something bad to deserve to be there.
I think that is a commonly held belief. One of the things that Amnesty does really well is research. And for the Global Write-A-Thon, for example, we have a case sheet that tells each person's story. We have 10 identified human rights defenders and political prisoners that we are writing on behalf of. And there is a case sheet for all of the prisoners of conscience that we write on throughout the year, throughout across our sections in the United States and in other countries. And we know what the person's story is. We know what the current situation is. We have Amnesty offices in over 80 countries that are doing research. We do research missions into different countries and different areas of the world to find out exactly what is happening. And our research is really top-notch. It's the basis of our work. So we know the situations, and opportunities such as this give local folks the chance to learn what those situations are. They learn what an individual story is that represents a much broader human rights issue. So we know what is happening in China because we know of the case of Xi Tao, who's a Chinese journalist who used his Yahoo email account to send a message to a pro-democracy website in the United States, and he was then sentenced to 10 years in prison. So we know somebody's story, and we're able to share that with thousands and thousands of activists across the world.
I'd like to say another thing about many prisoners of conscience are indigenous people. They're simply Indians living where they've lived for generations, off the land, in the jungle, in areas that they've always lived, and suddenly...
You're talking about worldwide.
Worldwide, and suddenly Honduras is an excellent example. I think it was last January or February. Suddenly the government's going to come in, or a corporation is going to come in and put in an airport or put in clear-cut trees, and these people are simply standing up and saying, this is where I live, and they get thrown in jail because of their freedom of expression being stomped on. It is one of the people we're going to be writing to, we wrote to on Friday and we're writing again today, are the women of Atenco, Mexico. We actually did an action for them this spring called the Mariposas Action at the Santa Fe Farmers Market. And they have been, they were just women who were going to support the local laborers, and they got jumped and beaten and raped and thrown in prison, and they have been languishing there since 2006.
Good heavens. Sarah, some of the other areas of human rights that Amnesty works on are things like torture and immigration detention. Those are two that certainly are on the forefront of people's minds here. Can you talk about how Amnesty deals with the issue of torture?
Absolutely. So our Counter Terror with Justice campaign is one of our four priority campaigns for the Amnesty International USA section. And we have several campaign goals. We're working to ensure accountability for torture and abuse, to reject indefinite detention and unfair military commissions, to end illegal U.S. detention in Iraq and Afghanistan, and close all loopholes for torture and other ill treatment. A lot of our work is focused around accountability for torture, so we're interested in closing Guantanamo and holding those who authorized, turned a blind eye to, and carried out acts of torture in the U.S. from top officials down to the very bottom, that they'd be held accountable for their acts of torture.
How does, for example, the U.S. government respond to Amnesty International when there's a letter-writing campaign from its own people? Do they respond also? Does it work?
Absolutely. Letter writing works because it puts pressure on those who are in power, be it a foreign government who has imprisoned Aung San Suu Kyi for 10 years, or the U.S. government. We have letters being written to President Obama, to key senators and representatives that are focused on our Counterterror with Justice campaign. In these letters, we also carry We gather petitions and signatures and write individual letters, but we also take part in quarterly lobby efforts, which happen in district. So it's Amnesty members and volunteers meeting with their elected officials to have conversations about what these human rights issues are and what they would like to see done in the United States to fix them.
My group here in Santa Fe, all throughout 2007 and 2008, we wrote to Ethiopia and Iran and Israel and Congo and Tunisia and all of these places around the world. And if we all can think back during 2008, how many of us were so depressed by the torture issues and the pretty much the Bush administration and where we were headed as a country, I take a vote at the end of every year. I'll have a discussion with my members, and we talk about what we'd like to do the next year, and unanimously everyone in the group, and there were about 13 at that meeting, which is quite a large number for us, said we don't want to keep writing to other countries when we have these human rights abuses going on right under our nose, our local immigration system, and the torture thing. So since January of this year, we have written Eric Holder, Hillary Clinton, Ben Ray Lujan, the Senate Appropriations Committee, over and over and over again, Obama and Clinton, regarding the Janet Napolitano, regarding the issues I just mentioned.
Sarah, tell us more about the issue of immigration detention. That's something that I think is very important that our listeners know about.
Absolutely. Amnesty International USA released a very significant report in March of this past year called Jailed Without Justice, and it was an examination of human rights abuses that are taking place in U.S. immigration detention facilities. It was a report outlining the abuses, but also calling for recommendations to look at alternatives to detention in the United States while individuals are going through immigration proceedings. That report is available on our website, and it's really significant. Immigration, there were several major immigration detention reports released around that same time looking at condition of detention facilities for women or children in detention facilities. And Amnesty's report really looked at the human rights abuses that were taking place in U.S. detention facilities.
What are some of the stories from that report that stuck in your mind?
Some of the stories that were highlighted in the report were cases of U.S. citizens who didn't happen to have their driver's license or their birth certificate on them when they were apprehended, and then sat in a detention facility for several months until they were able to work up the amount of money to purchase their new birth certificate, for example. There are examples of women who have families and children who are working here legally on a green card who are detained based solely on their appearance. They were presumed to be an undocumented immigrant and were put into a detention facility without any access to legal recourse. There are also examples of those who have fled torture and persecution in other countries and come to the U.S. seeking asylum, who ended up experiencing mistreatment in the U.S. detention system. There's one case of a Tibetan who fled torture in Tibet and came to the United States and then languished in a detention facility for multiple months, receiving very poor care until his hearings went through.
Here in Santa Fe, Amnesty sent, well, throughout the country, Amnesty sent out delegations to local senators and representatives. And here in New Mexico, I led a delegation to Bingaman's office. The coordinator of a student group led a delegation to Udall's office, and the Las Vegas group led a delegation to Lujan's office, just on Jailed Without Justice.
So really addressing the issue of immigration detention and some of the really horrible things. I mean, one hears on Democracy Now! About people who die of cancer and are completely untreated in these immigration. I mean, it's a hellhole.
It's a hellhole, and children are there. What are children doing in detention? Endless detention.
Right. And what are children doing in jail?
At all.
When no one's committed a crime except being in the wrong place and most of the time working.
Yes.
But in any case, there's another issue that I want to hear about, which is the issue of military contractors, which is something else that Amnesty is working on.
Amnesty is concerned about military contractors and their role in human rights abuses. So our actions would be aimed not only at the U.S. government or governments of other countries, but also at any industry or corporation that is also violating human rights. So military contractors, any concerns that would arise with a government carrying out mistreatment of detainees in Iraq or Afghanistan, for example, could also be seen as a problem of military contractors.
And that's a huge, I mean, we've had Jeremy Scahill on this program when his book about Blackwater came out, but it's this gigantic, unregulated area of the sort of quasi-military, quasi-private contractors who were doing things that basically there's no oversight of. It's terrifying.
And that's one of the things Amy Goodman brought up on Democracy Now! Last week, was Obama had just committed 30,000 more troops, but how many contractors are going to be over there? How many thousands of contractors? I mean, there's going to be thousands more people that we don't get counted.
So, Sarah, how did you get into this work yourself? What was your motivation for devoting your life's energy to Amnesty International?
Well, this is very much a dream position for me to be in. I've been with Amnesty for just under a year, and prior to that, my background was in social justice organizing and international development. I have studied public health and social work in Kenya and Zambia, and through that work, I kept running into roadblocks that would have been solved by a protection of human rights. So when I was working at an HIV prevention clinic, looking at the right to health was a more effective way for me to prevent HIV than to be on the ground doing that. What I like about human rights work and social justice work is that there's a very basic understanding that all humans are created equal in dignity and in rights, that the Universal Declaration of Human Rights protects every human by nature of being human. They're not rights that can be protected, that can be granted by a government or an institution, but it gives us kind of a roadmap to follow. We know what our rights are as individuals and how we can support the rights of others. So this work for me incorporates work in developing countries, work in the United States, work with people of all backgrounds, and to address health, to address racial oppression. It kind of brings everything full circle for me.
Susan Tarman, as we just discussed a little while ago, the local chapter, the local group of Amnesty International is meeting here at the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road in Santa Fe to do a write-a-thon. How can people, if they can't make it in today to the baking company, how can they get in touch with you and get more involved?
Oh, please take down my email address, susan.ai122@gmail.com.
And AI122 stands for Amnesty International 122. That's the number of your group.
That's correct. And you can also, if you haven't written that down, it's very simple to just go to amnestyusa.org, and actually the write-a-thon is on the homepage right now, but you can just type in write-a-thon and get all of these cases and write from home. But we would love you to come down now, because it's a really a solidarity feeling here, and everybody just writing a little postcard to somebody that you know is on the edge of despair. It's just a wonderful local good feeling. So please come down again. You don't need to bring a thing. We've got the pens, the paper, the postcards, and all of the cases. So please come on down.
Susan Tarman is founder of the Santa Fe Group of Amnesty International, and Sarah Schmidt is the field organizer for the Western region of Amnesty International USA, and the website is amnestyusa.org. Thank you both so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org and podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. My email is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Thanks to Marilyn LeBlanc for engineering today. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, the Colors of Jazz.